You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the second of three live hours of tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool from South Carolina. So we went into some great detail in the first hour explaining where we're at, what we're doing, what we're experiencing, who we're with, and so on. I want to thank again our gracious host. What an accomplishment this guy has brought to the table. And what he's building here. And again, this thing only got off the ground about 3 or 4 months ago, and it's already more well-established than entities and organizations that have been operating for years and years and years, decades even, and doing better work than most everything I've seen, I can tell you that. Well, we are going now to just different people who were here. I met in a very impressive, well, I call him a young man. He's not too much younger than me, but he looks like he's about 18. God, that square jaw. He looks like Chris Pratt, if anybody's ever seen Jurassic World. You know what I'm talking about? So we got, and he's even got a manly name, Hunter. Hunter is with us. How you doing, Hunter?
Good, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I love the accent. You know, we're all Southerners here. Sometimes it's a little, you know, accents are a little more Southern than others. But tell us a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to the audience.
James, I appreciate, first of all, I want to say I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak here tonight and you coming here. And we're all appreciative of that. I know your show, been accustomed to your show, been listening to for a while. And my name is Hunter. Grown up in the upcountry of South Carolina my whole life. Never left. Went down to Charleston for about 8 or 9 years and had my taste of the coastal life for some time. But I moved back a couple of years ago, and I'm here to stay. And I've been involved with this place for some time, since August. And I've enjoyed myself here, and I'm looking forward to what's to come.
Well, with the kind of people I have had the privy and the privilege of meeting with and sharing in conversation and fellowship with today, there is a lot more to come here. I mean, this is really just the beginning, and if this was all it would ever be, it's already better than most anything I've seen in my career. But let's talk about what we were talking about a second ago during the extended break, the top of the hour break, about why you do what you do and why you have been drawn to such an endeavor.
Why I do what I do. James, I've been involved with Confederate heritage my whole life. I was born into this thing. I didn't really have a choice. My dad brought me up in it. It was a boring, mundane thing my whole life. I got dragged around to battlefields, monuments, and reenactments, and all that was just boring to me.
But then it took hold.
In 2015, I was in London, and July the 10th of 2015, the Confederate flag came down in Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah, don't we all remember?
And that was that was my arc, I guess you could say, my changing point, my turning
interesting.
Point in
Very
life.
Interesting.
I was in London, and I'm witnessing what's going on back home in South Carolina, and at the same time, I'm seeing the demographic changes that are going on in London. And so I'm getting a twofold witness, a testimony account of what's going on with our people, and that lit my fire from that moment on. So from 2015 until now, I've been on this journey of learning and waking up to all this that my father had instilled in me from day one.
The seed germinated. You know, the seed germinated. Right. That's the thing. I can remember. I saw a picture not too long ago. I was probably about 3 years old, and I was in a stroller, and it was my mom and my dad. And they were pushing me through Shiloh. I was brought up in a very conservative Christian Southern family. Not outspoken activists, like the man I grew up to be, but they instilled in me this foundation. And, you know, you take it for granted, I guess, to an extent as you're growing up. That's just the only thing you know. So, yeah, okay, sure. But then one day, like you, the fire just got lit. And it wasn't necessarily an attack. It just the light switch got turned
my
up.
My switch got flipped.
And that's it. The switch got flipped. And I said, this is what I need to be doing. And I started getting involved. I started reading more, learning more. And then, of course, you know, everybody who's a regular listener to this show knows that I got started with Pat Cannon in 1999, my own campaign for the legislature, 2002. And then in 2004, the opportunity to get into radio stuff. And I've been here ever since. But I'll tell you, it is so important. Teach your children well, a song that we all know so well. And it does bear fruit. The fruit does the flower blossoms at some point on in life.
Well, the good thing about planting seeds, James, is all you got to do is throw seeds out there. It's up to God to germinate them.
Little rain, little sunshine, that they will do what they have what they are supposed to. And that's what you're doing, and to some sacrifice, if I'm not mistaken. This is obviously. We don't get into this for the accolades and for the material wealth that one might accumulate on this earthly plane. It is something that is much more important than that.
Right. I was a public school teacher for some years, and then that I knew that I couldn't stay in that field, so I went into the private school, and even from there I saw that because of who I was, I could not stick around,
you know,
and so I left.
I'd like to get your take on this because you've had the experience as a professional. But my parents sent me to a private Christian school, a pretty prestigious one in the Memphis area. I tell the joke all the time when my classmates graduated, all the parents cheered because college tuition was less than the tuition to go to high school. But I can remember at that high school. In my elementary school years, we would pledge allegiance to the flag, and we would sing Dixie. And this is at an elite private school. But that was the way it was in the 1980s, all the way through the late 80s. But now, I mean, that school would disavow me in a New York minute, and they're ashamed of their patrimony. Of course, all these private schools, why did all of a sudden private schools come into being? You know, they all seem to come into being right after forced busing and integration. But there they are. But it was a wonderful experience growing up. It's a wonderful school to go to at that time. But that's not that school anymore. It still has the same name, but all that's changed. You probably know it all too well.
Right. When we started offering scholarships to black athletes within the area, school started becoming half black, essentially, and it changed everything.
That was not a thing that went on. I mean, of course, we always hear about that with colleges and universities, but high schools didn't do that when I was growing up. Anybody seen the Blind Side movie? You know the Blind Side movie? That was my school. That was Briarcrest Christian School in Memphis, Tennessee. It was called Wingate Christian Academy in the movie, but that was our school. That came after my time there, but that just goes to show how quickly good people can go wrong. What's inspirational is people coming back and doing the Lord's work, standing strong for their faith and their family. And that's what you're doing. We'll continue to have the discussion right after this word. We'll be right back.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Well, as with any given show, ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you the best part of it happens during the commercial break, whether it be the conversation with my co-host or the on the rare occasions where we do the live remote broadcast with the audience here assembled. We are having a great time in South Carolina tonight. We're talking with Hunter, who's been sharing with you a little bit of his story in the last segment. Hunter spent nearly a decade in one of my favorite places in the world, the holy city of Charleston, South Carolina. Charleston's a place where you can have a good time. You can fall in love. A lot of things can happen in Charleston.
You got that right.
Don't you know it, huh?
I know it.
But I had a very interesting experience in Charleston. Not really a few, but some are made for suitable for a radio audience.
All fair.
And the, what was it, 2004, 2005, they found the Hunley.
Yes.
And they pulled the Hunley out of Charleston Harbor. That, of course, the legendary
Were you there for that, James?
I was there for
Me
that.
Me too. I was just
for
a little
funeral,
boy.
For the funeral.
Yes, sir. I was on the Yorktown.
So I was, I guess, about 23, 24 when that happened. 25. What year was that? It all blurs now. 04, 05 it had to be.
James, I think it might have been 03 or 04.
That's when they pulled it out, okay? I was not there for that, but I was there for the funeral of the crew.
Where they paraded around
yes.
the battery.
Yes, where they paraded around okay. the battery. And they, I mean, that was literally, no hyperbole, the last Confederate funeral. I mean, that was the crew of the Hunley. Lieutenant Dixon and mm-hmm. the crew there, their actual bodies were being laid to rest in an earthly grave, as opposed to a watery one. It before our very eyes, it was an incredible thing to be at. That was only about 15 years ago, Hunter. That was in the city of Charleston, not far from where we are now. And it 10,000, 20,000 people. Were you there for the actual funeral procession?
No, sir, I wasn't. I was there when they brought the Hunley
No,
up.
I was not there for that.
I was there for that, but I was not there for the funeral. But I do know some people that were there, and they were talking about all the thousands of people
had
that
to
were
be,
there.
I wouldn't even say that. It had to be 10 or 20,000 people. It was a monstrous gathering. Ted Turner, of all people. I've shared this story many times on the show, but since I'm in South Carolina, I'm going to share it again because it's one of my favorite stories to tell. I was there for the last Confederate funeral. That's it. I mean, that's what it was. Ted Turner, of all people, led the procession on horseback, dressed as a Confederate general.
Really?
Ted Turner, Jane Fonda's, Mr. Jane Fonda, CNN's founder. But, you know, he also funded some movies like The Hunley with Amanda Sante and, of course, Gods and Generals, which was a fantastic movie. But that was a great time to be in Charleston. But that was 15 years ago, but a lifetime away, it seems.
Definitely different today. Well, at that time, I've got pictures from the funeral, which you were at.
To go by and lay cedar on the. I did that. They had little twigs of cedar that you could lay on the actual caskets of these Confederate heroes.
And the pictures that I have, there's Confederate battle flags all down Broad Street.
Oh, there were,
and also the battery.
People were crying. People were cheering. When the band played Dixie during that procession, there hasn't been that sort of manifestation of rebel yells since the 1860s, I can tell you. It was it gave you chills and shivers to be there. It gives them to me now even to remember it.
There's still some of those old Charleston families that live in
that wasn't
on the
'50s or the '60s. That
right,
was
it wasn't
15
that long
years ago.
But there's been a lot of people that have moved down from outside of the state.
No, don't we know it?
Yep,
we saw what happened to Georgia, didn't we?
Right,
with those transient New Yorkers coming into Atlanta. But that was a fantastic experience in Charleston. Charleston is a beautiful city. Charleston,
it really is.
You know, drips Southern.
Right,
or at least it used to, and I guess somewhere in the marrow of its bones, it perhaps still does. I know they want to try to distance themselves now to avoid the rancor, but
everywhere you turn, it screams Southern heritage. Everywhere you turn down there, and no matter what they do, they'll never get rid of that. So I don't care how many people move down and try to change it. It screams our heritage in the architecture, in the street stones, the cobblestones, all that. I mean.
That's another thing. You bring something up, the architecture. Everything about our people, what we produce, our spirit, all the way down to our architecture is beautiful. Everything about those who oppose us, those who hate us, the true hatred that exists in this country and in this world is the hatred that is directed towards white Christians, to put a name to it, but particularly white Christians in the South. And... But everything our people have produced, going all the way back to ancient Greek and Greece and Rome, and it's beautiful. Even to the architecture, everything they produce is ugly and hate-filled, and it manifests itself in their very physical appearance. You look at the people who represent Antifa, and you compare them to anybody I've seen here today, and it rots them from the inside out.
What we see on the outside is evidence what's on the inside.
From their art to their physical appearance, right, to everything, any other standard of measurement you could draw upon.
Right.
So we're in South Carolina.
We are the best state, the first to fight and the first to secede.
Tell us what it means to you to be a South Carolinian.
Oh, I love
and what
being
this
a South
land
Carolinian,
means to you.
A sandlapper. My mama used to read me stories from South Carolina's history. I grew up on Brer Rabbit, even though that's Southern heritage in general. But I grew up knowing where I was from and being proud of where I was from and the unique heritage that we have to offer. And I mentioned being in London, not just on the last segment. That when I went overseas and I was in Europe, I began to see how unique our region is and how special our people are. And that's really when that all solidified with me. So I'm very proud to be a South Carolinian. I'll fight you all day in which state's the best. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's South Carolina.
Hey, you know, I give this speech that I've given to different groups, and we compare and contrast our heroes and our stories. And you know, I'll tell you what about Tennessee. Hard-pressed to beat some of the heroes that have come from my home state of Tennessee, Nathan Bedford Forrest, Davy Crockett, and Jack Daniels.
Now, wait a minute, James. See, I went to Wade Hampton High School, named after Wade Hampton III.
Oh, yeah.
An outstanding hero of the South and our savior, Reconstruction. So, We can go all day.
Well,
about
I tell you what, it's a good conversation to have, isn't it? What wouldn't it be wonderful if that was the conversation we had to have when if the modern day equivalent were still in play, and we could compare Tennessee and South Carolina? You know, I'm partial to Mississippi. My grandparents were first generation on both sides, first generation Tennesseans. So I'm a second generation Tennessean. My grandparents were born in Mississippi. On my mom's side and dad's side, they moved to Memphis because it was the nearest big city to find work. And there they started their families and had my mom and dad, respectively. They met and, you know, got married and had me. But so my parents were first generation Tennesseans, I should say. I'm a second generation Tennessean. And so I'll claim Forest as one of my own. But before that, in the war years, in the war between the states, we were all in Mississippi. So I love Mississippi. Mississippi's a fantastic state, too. Hated to see the flag go earlier this year, but we shall overcome.
We shall overcome, and if that's one message that I want everybody to hear tonight, it's that y'all shall live. You all shall live, no matter what. As long as the sun's in the sky and the stars are out at night, the moon's shining, we shall live. We're going to get through all this, and all of this that's going on, it's just a training ground.
Well, I'd ask you, Hunter, your opinion on this. There's a scene in the movie Gone with the Wind, which, of course, has been banned like everything else that was decent and good. But Clark Gable has the line, "One day they're going to turn and fight, and when they do, I'll be there with them." He's talking about the retreating Confederates in a scene in that film. Are people going to do that one day?
Yes. Yes. But it's when our people – it's like the story of the prodigal son, James, and I know you know that story. When he was flat on his back looking up at the heavens – realizing who he was, that's when he came to himself and went back home to his daddy.
Our people will turn, our people will fight, our people will win. So says Hunter, and so says I. So say I. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in South Carolina tonight. There's nowhere in the world I'd rather be in this particular moment. Fantastic people, fantastic weekend. You're only getting a short glimpse of it. We're doing the best we can. We'll be right back.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The United States has reported its 12 millionth coronavirus case as infections continue to rise across the country. Another daily record for new cases was set Friday with more than 195,000 new cases confirmed. As cities and states keep implementing new restrictions to try to control the spread of the virus, many are questioning the economic impact of those moves, and many are pushing Congress to pass another round of stimulus to help businesses and workers weather the pandemic. Senator Ben Cardin is hopeful that Democrats and Republicans can come together to get a bill done. The Maryland Democrat tells Fox News that there's a renewed push from both sides of the aisle to get a bill on the president's desk during this lame duck session.
There's been lots of conversations among Democrats and Republicans on let's come together, let's compromise, let's have a bipartisan bill, but let's make sure it is significant enough to get us through to the spring of next year.
This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy points, and availability vary by state. As coronavirus cases have been rising across the country, there is hope at recent announcements about two upcoming vaccines. But with that, could door-to-door COVID vaccines become a thing?
Pfizer and BioNTech have both submitted a request to the FDA for their COVID-19 vaccine to be granted emergency use authorization. Pfizer has said their two-shot vaccine is 95% effective. That company is on track to produce 50 million doses by the end of 2020 and 1.3 billion doses in 2021. BioNTech CEO Uğur Şahin says filing for emergency use authorization in the U.S. is a critical step in making their vaccine candidate available to the global population as quickly as possible. The rush to market can be concerning for consumers as the nation faces another potential lockdown, meaning vaccines will then be distributed in closely controlled quarters or door-to-door in home, leaving those normally not at risk now exposed to the virus. From the Texas USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Val Dior.
This is USA Radio News.
Oh yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to tonight's very special installment of the Political Cesspool, a show that is as timely as it is needed in this wretched day and age that we find ourselves working through and fighting through. An oasis of hope and encouragement, that's what we are presenting to you this evening, and it's very easy to do when you are full of hope and inspiration, and that's, of course, what's been drawn from the people that I have been around this weekend. You've heard from our host tonight in the first hour, the things that are being built here in real life for real people to come and share in. You heard just a moment ago earlier this hour from Hunter, what a great appearance he made and what a great and encouraging message he brought. Now we have Johnny. Well, we'll just call him Johnny Reb at this point, considering the atmosphere in the company. Johnny's all about lead, leather, and steel. Well, aren't we all to some extent? So, Johnny, take it away. Great to have you.
Good to see you again, James. It's been too long.
Yes, it has, and we hope that it won't be this long before the next time. So, as close as we can to the windscreen, and let's give it to him. So, we were talking earlier with our host about the need for people to engage in trades and real skill. I'm not talking about the skill that your sociology humanities professor says you have after going through 4 years. Incredible debt, the student loan debt. What a racket to worthless degree. I'm talking about real things, real trades that can help you in real life. This is something you've become a master craftsman at.
Yes, I spent my life building things, whether it's playing with guns, leather, or welding, fabrication. It really doesn't matter. These are skills we're all going to need very soon.
So how did you get involved in the company that we find ourselves in tonight with what's going on here on this property?
That story is way too long for this segment, but it's been a lifelong quest to find like-minded people, and I'm home.
And you told me earlier today when I was visiting with you out in your shop, as this is a property that has several different structures, that the demand. Tell us one of your most recent shifts. How long you were working? And what kind of work that was that you were doing?
Well, last Saturday, I showed up here at 10 a.m., and I worked till 4 a.m. Sunday morning.
When you told me 10 to 4, I was like, wow, 6 hours, that's good business. He said, no, 4 a.m.
18 hours.
18 hours. What were you doing?
I made countless holsters, sharpened a handful of knives, and I tried doing a little bit of gunsmithing in between.
And so we were talking about that earlier. It's not like you were... you know, polishing the boots you bought wholesale and getting them ready for display. This is stuff you're actually making by hand. Who are the customers? Who are the clients for work like this?
They varied. It was big money people in here. There were people that just brought in junk trying to fix it, and it really didn't matter.
But the word in this community is spreading that, hey, there's a guy that does this kind of work, and if you're in need for very unique services such as the ones you provide, bring it here.
Yeah.
And that's how, again, this community is beginning to snowball and spread and grow.
That cobblers are a dying trade, and everybody just throws everything away and buys new. Well, that time's going to end.
And these are paying customers. I mean, so this is something you're doing as a hobby because you love it so much. This is something that
that someone with, again, a real pliable trade and a skill can make a living doing. And for the betterment of his community, because this is work that people need.
Yeah.
People should want to have, as opposed to going to pay less and getting, you know, something from China or wherever you, Bass Pro Shop or one of these conglomerates and getting a gun.
And I encourage people to bring their kids, because I'll have them doing crafts out there while I'm doing what I do.
Well, we were out there today. I don't know how much my one-month-old, you know, was able to learn from it, but she was certainly there, and my wife was there, and I was fascinated to see the shop, to see the kind of work you do, learn a little bit more about it. You know, I didn't get to, you know, see, you know, a whole lot of a demonstration, mm-hmm. but what I saw was very impressive.
Well, custom leather is, I think it's going to make a comeback eventually.
So what kind of custom leather are we talking about? You know, obviously, we mentioned holsters. I got to hold one of the handmade holsters that grew here on the property.
Today, I got an order for a motorcycle seat. I have more holsters coming. And people are wanting knife sheaths, scabbards, boot repair, shoe repair.
And how does the client base grow? Is it just word of mouth?
Pretty much.
Good work begets...
It's
the next customer. He tells his friend. So I mean, but that again, we've been talking about it tonight, how everything we've been describing this evening has sort of sprung up organically, but not just that it's done that it's done it so quickly and in short order. How long have you been on the scene here?
A little bit over about a month.
A month. So you came in even a little bit after the whole thing, guys. I say again, at the point of sounding repetitious, this what I've seen here, you know, would take a normal person several years to build to get to where it is mm-hmm. tonight.
Yes.
You've been working with not even several months.
Yeah, it's just I had all the tools. I just brought them to one spot, and here we go.
Well, I'll ask you the same question I asked an earlier guest. The kind of people that serve as your clientele, what kind of people are we talking about?
Common people. Common people with common problems. I have simple solutions. Let's fix it.
So what more can you do here? Because it sounded like you could actually expand and do more with other facilities and other tools above and beyond what we've described already.
If we had a fab shop here, we could build stuff too. We could build big things.
Can you make another Hundley?
Ooh, that's a sore subject.
No,
that's a painful subject.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, we need it. We need another one, though.
But we can.
Well, you talked about work with a foundry. What kind of work does that entail?
Well, you need a forge.
That's what I'm talking about. A forge.
Yeah, and I mean blacksmithing is another trade that's really coming back. There's lots of people getting into that.
Now, that's something that you have some experience with as well, or some knowledge in. That's not something that you're currently set up to do, but if the facilities were made available, what kind of work could spring out of that type of a shop?
Making common tools that common men use. Axes, hammers, wedges. I mean, that's the simplest things. But you use them all the time.
So... Again, I paint the picture as being a step back in time, almost to a village that we might have seen in our ancestral mm-hmm. memory. I can actually literally see you with the heated metal pounding that into form.
Oh yeah.
What you know? How many people actually get to see something like that anymore in real life? You were doing your work today as if, and it certainly was to a certain degree, an attraction, you know, for some people to walk in and see and learn from, and it serves as a, sort of a form of entertainment, you know, educational entertainment to be sure, but this is the kind of wholesome stuff that people are deprived of that I guess, you know, our ancestors may have taken for granted, but now we give, you and the others that are a part of this experience here, give them the opportunity to come and see, and it's just a step back in time, and it just it makes you feel good.
Oh yeah, I get warm and fuzzy every time I do it. Every time
you look like the warm and fuzzy type of guy. I wish it's radio, not television, so people can't see who I'm talking to. You know, rough and tumble type of guy, but heart of a teddy bear, that's for sure.
No, I really take pleasure in people appreciating the craftsmanship and kids having that sense of awe, seeing things in motion, seeing things come together.
Well, and we had the kids out here today. I mean, I'm not talking about my own biological offspring. I mean, we did have my youngest daughter. My other two were at home. But a lot of kids were coming through the different things to do here today. And it was certainly an encouraging thing to see. So, again, South Carolina, a cradle of the Confederacy. Your favorite Southern hero, who is it and why?
You're killing me.
Not too many to choose from. It's a tall order.
The crew of the Hundley.
The first to do what they did. The first submarine to sink an enemy vessel in wartime. And we talk, you know, when we think about the crew of the Hundley, we think about the last crew of the Hundley. We don't think about Hundley himself and those crews who sank. I mean, Dixon's crew who got in there and sunk the Housatonic. That was, I think, the third crew with the other two, you know, having perished even in training exercises. The courage it took to even board that vessel, much less go out and use it as an attack vessel. But that's these backward Southerners. All they did was invent the first submarine. You know, what more could we have done had we been unimpeded? Johnny, thanks so much for being with us tonight. The commercial's about to come on.
Thank you, James, really for giving me the opportunity to
realize the assault against our lives.
We'll be back.
Our liberties, our faith. To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com. Or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheep herder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine. Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Get on the show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to be doing now for the rest of the show, we've already passed the halfway point. We have one more segment, obviously, and this our second hour, and then we have the third hour, and then we're done, and it is going by. It doesn't seem like time could possibly pass this quickly, but when you're having fun, it always does. So we're going to be in the third hour and beginning actually right now. We're going to have one guest per segment so we can work through as many people here as possible who want to join us on the radio. There have been no disappointments so far, and I don't anticipate any going forward. Well, I put something up on my Twitter account the other day that we would soon be releasing the definitive James Edwards CNN collection. So I had the opportunity back in the mid-2000s to serve as a contributor, as short-lived as that stint may have been, with CNN. And we have over 60 minutes of me on national television, standing up unapologetically for our people in nationally televised conversations about race. Well, you know that if you're a regular listener of the show. That's not newsworthy, and it's certainly not anything that you haven't heard before. But it is rare company indeed when I am in the same room as another gentleman that received limousine service from CNN. I mean, and wouldn't you know it? He's here tonight. He's in this room. I said, Pat, I saw you on CNN. I know you don't mind taking the microphone in hand. He said, yeah, and they sent a limousine for me. I said, we got to share stories, and that's what we're going to do right now. So we got Pat here with us in South Carolina. Pat, tell us who you are. Tell us, introduce yourself to the audience, and then let's get into the meat of the matter.
Well, my name is Pat, as he's told y'all, and I am a South Carolina native, born in Florence. Lived all in a number of southern states. My father refused to take a job outside of the South. He worked for a large dairy company that no longer exists now, but it did in 1940s and 50s and 60s. So anyway, CNN. They called me up when they were taking the Confederate flag down from the memorial near the South Carolina State House.
In Columbia.
And want it right. And they wanted me to talk to them about what my feelings were on it, and which I did.
I remember watching it. That's what I said. I mean, I recognized you as soon as you came into the building tonight. I said, Pat, I'd seen you on TV, so come on, buddy.
Yeah, they came. In fact, they did it twice. Once they wanted Chris Cuomo. Keep in mind, I didn't know who these people were. I don't watch CNN. I did not know who Chris Cuomo was.
Well, you're not missing any. You're
I did
you're
not know who Don Lemon or Lemon is either.
So you actually got interviewed by Don Lemon
I did.
Chris Cuomo.
Yeah, both. And two different times. And the limo came all the way to my house, took me all the way over Spartanburg, 30 miles away, and back, of course. And
so
they
didn't leave you to hitchhike home. No, it was nice.
Fortunately, although the what was that woman, the black woman lawyer, Sunny something or other, she was on with Don Lemon, and she would have happily made me thumb a ride back to.
Well, I'm sure you were afforded every courtesy and even chance to present your side on.
They were tolerable, except when I mentioned Southern cultural genocide, they didn't like that so much. Mm. And of course, I said, that's what y'all were engaged in here. And it was one of those deals. But I got through it, and I didn't, of course, I got interviewed with the local television station, too. That was very brief, and that was, Greenville local TV. But CNN was the biggie, I guess. And
well, I remember you appointed yourself well and with dignity and in a manner befitting your Southern patrimony, as I like to call it. But, it seems as though, and that was certainly much more recent than my experiences with the network, but it seems as though those avenues have pretty much been cut off. They, of course, would bring us on to be the villains and the bad guys, and they would have this teachable moment where they put people like us in our place, or so they thought. But I can't remember the last time I saw anyone like you on television. They just don't afford that opportunity. That was 5 years ago now.
Yeah, that was the last
interview. Seems like yesterday.
They don't come to me anymore.
That whole thing that Yeah, that seems really like it was yesterday, but it's hard to believe mm-hmm. It's been 5 years.
Fortunately, I was able to record those, so I have my own personal videos of those events.
As do I.
So they're in my archives.
Well, and well deserved, and congratulations for that. I mean, congratulations to anyone, and praise be to you, sir, for anyone who will go on a national televised broadcast like that and stand up for the truth and for decency and common sense and reason and all of the things that are certainly our calling cards. Not many people would do that.
Well, you know, it was kind of sad in a way. They were looking, at first they wanted the Sons of Confederate Veterans leader, whoever that is now, I don't really know. I dropped out in 2015 because they literally went into hiding and refused to be interviewed at all. And they called me up and I said, sure, why not? So there I went. The big thing to me is what I love about Paul's work here on his business is he's the he's really
the Lord of the Manor.
Yes, he is. Now, I live very close here. I live about 3 miles away, so it's not a huge trip for me.
You can walk
almost,
especially in this nice weather. But okay, let's move off that. I hate to even invoke the name of CNN. Tonight when we're having such a good time. But then it was an interesting story, and I saw you, and I remember you doing well on those appearances. But let's talk about – well, I'll ask you the same question we asked Johnny a moment ago. When you go back and you look at the countless tales of heroism that took place over, you know, in the grand scheme of history, a short time, but still the time that I believe more than any other period defines the South. That 4 year period during the war years, heroes, tales of heroism from even the unknown names. What are some of the stories that come flooding into your memory?
My grandmother was a Charleston girl, and in the late 19th century, early 20th century, that was a big deal in South Carolina.
Oh yeah, the debutantes of Charleston.
Oh, practically.
That was Southern culture at its peak.
She was, of course, a member of the United Daughters of the Confederacy, way back. And she tried to get my father to name me Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, well, I wonder where she would have gotten that name from.
Exactly. And my father and my mother, who was from Missouri, they had met in World War II, and they decided together that was not going to happen. So I got a good solid Irish name, and then my mother had Dutch relatives.
Well, you know, we've got Patrick Claiborne, so you know,
yeah,
it could be worse.
Sort of.
That's a good name.
So anyway, as far you know, I know you ask. I think Johnny, what his favorite Confederate hero was, and it is hard to choose. It really is, but Bedford Forrest has to be very close to the top of the heap. And the reason is, if other Southern leadership had listened to what he tried to tell them, the problem was we had too many West Pointers.
Listen, you're singing our tune right here. We talk about that. I mean, we do a Confederate History Month show every April, and we talk about that. If they had turned Forrest loose,
it would have been unbelievable.
He would have mopped the floor with him, as he did, always outnumbered, never outfought.
Well,
of course,
Jefferson Davis was a West Pointer, of course. Robert E. Lee.
And well, so that, not and to say that everybody from West Point
Jackson.
Was a dud, obviously,
right.
But and yeah. BMI and all of those people, but. You think of Braxton Bragg and some of the others. I mean, I'll never disparage any man who fought for the South, but there were, you know, hindsight's 20/20, of course. But I'll tell you the thing about Forrest. Now, obviously, being a Tennessean and a Memphian,
right,
Forrest is my
right.
guy. My
hero. I knew I would.
You knew you were going to get me excited. But this is a guy. I mean, we talk about this every year. My God, how fast the time's flying tonight. We got 1 minute left.
Forrest was like, what, the 12th child of his family, born into abject poverty, had no education whatsoever. And from all of that, rose to become a self-made millionaire in business. And then even though he was exempt from fighting, decided to donate the vast sum of his fortune to outfit Confederate troops. And then though he's exempt from serving, joined as a soldier of the lowest rank as a private and with no military training. Talk about West Point. Talk about nothing. No military training. He rose to be probably the greatest tactician in the history of mobile warfare. I mean, mythological gods don't accomplish the things that he did in real life.
Well, he was a consummate horseman. That was the biggie. You know, his unit, he made them into a mobile force.
But with no military training, I mean, how would it even occur to him to be able to do? I was at Fort Pillow.
I don't think anybody knows. Maybe God whispered in his ear. That's the only thing I can think of.
I mean, it just his real life story. I don't think I've ever read anything from the Greeks and the Romans
that
beats it. Maybe matches it. Except that never really happened. He really happened, and he really did those things.
Yes, he did.
Thank you for bringing his name up tonight. No conversation about the South. Complete before we mention Bedford Forrest, that's for sure. We got 1 hour left in South Carolina, folks. We're going to bring it to you right after this. Thank you, Pat. We'll be right back.
There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.